Well, hello there. Rog Erickson here, along with Charlie Boone, and we're on with the party line. First portion brought to us by America White, and a very special guest today, former Vice President of the United States, former Senator from Minnesota, former Mayor of Minneapolis, former druggist from Huron, Hubert H. Humphrey. Glad to have you on the show again.
Well, can't you put something in the present tense? I don't want to be just former.
Well, I was kind of hoping you might do that and make our show famous. You know.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, I'm presently professor.
Oh,
of government.
Yes, that's right. How about the future? Would you like to say anything about the future at all?
Future's unlimited. I'm a man that always looks to the future and don't want to spend too much time thinking about the past.
You know, Vice President Humphrey was nominated by his party for the presidency of the United States, and it was very soon after that one of the first shows he appeared on at the Minnesota State Fair was the Boone Erickson Party Line. Even before that, he was on the Boone Erickson Party Line during another convention.
In Atlantic City. Yes.
And you were on the air with us, and your phone was being used to be on our show.
That's correct.
At the time that Lyndon Johnson was trying to get a hold of you to tell you that he thinks he would like to have you be his running mate.
That's right. You were interfering with my telephone conversation. But it all worked out beautifully. I shall never forget it. When I was getting the news, actually, from your broadcast.
That's right.
That's the way I found out about it. My phone was tied up, with the White House unable to get through into this suite of rooms that we had, your broadcast was on, and I was listening on the telephone to the broadcast that you were making when the president had announced that he was going to ask me to run for vice president.
The bulletin actually came over our program, which was heard on the telephone by Vice President Humphrey, and the bulletin said, President Johnson is trying to reach the vice president, trying to reach Senator Humphrey at the moment, but his phone is tied up.
And I guess it was that time I said, would you fellows mind hanging up while I get another call?
This party line is brought to you by Miracle White, and Mr. Humphrey, as a former vice president, as a former senator, as a historian, a professor, a student of history, we have some questions about the nation. There seems to be a lot of division in the nation, a certain polarization has taken place, according to some people. How do you feel about this?
Well, I think that our country is in a state of considerable confusion as to what it wants and what's going on. I think this is understandable. We are going through one of the most difficult periods of human history. With the rapidity of communication, we live in the electronics age when everything is instant. If nothing else had ever happened to this generation other than television and radio and mass communication, it would be almost more than a people could take in such a short period of time. For example, if there's a trouble in Africa or Asia, Middle East or Europe, it's flashed to us within seconds, in fact, with less time than that. So we are inundated, so to speak, with a mass of information and detail. This within itself causes people to be uncertain. Old values are constantly challenged. What we thought were truths are constantly being put under the searchlight of inquiry and suspicion and doubt. This plus all the other changes that have taken place, like urbanization, racial crisis, wars, recessions, depressions. All of this is really a very big order for people to handle. And I think that the amazing thing of our time is not that there's so much confusion or violence, but the fact that our society has survived it and that we are making the adjustments which are required for the times in which we live. There's a lot of good news, as you know, along with the bad news. Lots of it in terms of what has happened to our country and to the people here.
Our guest today, Hubert H. Humphrey, and our number is 339-9111. And we're ready with telephone calls at 20 minutes past 4 o'clock, and the temperature, 74.
I want to remind our listeners that we can't possibly handle all the telephone calls, and I'm sure we're going to get from Mr. Humphreys, so if you'll be patient, and if you hear a busy signal, then you'll have to hang up and dial again. If the line seems to be ringing like no one's there, that means that we're probably talking on the other line, so just be patient. And we'll try to get as many calls as we possibly can during this hour. Hello, party line. Go ahead, Mr. Humphreys, listening.
All right, I'd like to ask a question. I just want to know how come the men who were in power with President Johnson now seem to have all the answers for Vietnam and all the other problems we have when they didn't have those answers during the Johnson administration. I'll hang up and listen.
All right, thank you.
Well, I want you to know that I don't claim to have all of the answers, and if anybody does, why, they are either fooling themselves or attempting to fool you and the public. The problems that beset this country and the world are not subject to quick and easy answers. There surely isn't any easy answer to our problems of our economy. There are some things that we think we can do, that I hope will be done. And there are no easy answers to the world in which we live. I think we have to remember that we're going to live through a very long and difficult period of challenge and uncertainty and danger. This is the fact of our time. But we also are equipping ourselves to live through that period with better education, with better health, with better information, with better and modern technology, so that we're not as if we're helpless. Now, in reference to Vietnam, there isn't any easy solution to that problem. But there is a way that we can follow. And I happen to think it is a systematic, phased, accelerated withdrawal of our forces, not leaving the people there helpless, but doing what we are trying to do now and what, may I say most respectfully, what I advocated when I sought the presidency, namely to strengthen the peoples of South Vietnam, to strengthen their capacity for their own self-defense, to encourage the people in Southeast Asia to take on responsibilities of regional security, and to look to Asians themselves to try to solve some of their own problems. We're only 6% of the world's population, lady, and we can't settle everybody's problem. We don't have answers for all of it. But we can do some things, and some of those things I think we have been doing over the years with our foreign aid program, with our Peace Corps program, with our system of mutual security and collective security in Europe. And now in Southeast Asia, I can only say this, that I don't believe that the road to peace, which is what we all want, is what the president wants and is what I want, and I've tried in my own way to be of help to the president on this, and I think that's a matter of some record, that road to peace, I don't think, comes through an expansion of the war. This is where I've disagreed with the president. I realize that there are arguments for going into Cambodia, but I personally think that when we check it out, we'll see that we've paid a bigger price in men, loss of life, casualties, in the cost of our operations there, and I doubt that we'll be closer to peace. It seemed to me that President Nixon was on the right course when he started out, and as he says he will continue to do, and he'll have my support in that, as he withdraws our forces and tries to find a diplomatic initiative, a diplomatic settlement, because I think that's very, very important. So I don't come to you saying we got all the answers. I do say to you, though, that we mustn't give up. We simply have to keep working, and as a free people, we're going to discuss these things and discuss them out loud. That's the way to do it.
Party line on CCO, this next question I think has been answered in part by your previous statement. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I see. I just want to know why he badges Mr. Nixon about the withdrawal of troops right now when he and Johnson put them there and has done nothing to bring them back when they were in power.
Well, I'm not badgering the president. To the contrary, may I say. I have been supporting the president, and might I add that in 1968, when I proposed at my speech in Salt Lake City that this government change its policies, that's when I was running for president. There's only one president at a time, you know. Mr. Agnew is not president. Mr. Nixon's president. Mr. Agnew doesn't make any policy. He carries out policy. Hubert Humphrey wasn't president. He was vice president. He didn't make any policy. But when I ran for the presidency, and I spoke on my own, I advocated just exactly what's happening now in terms of troop withdrawals. And I was the only one that advocated it. President Johnson opposed me on it, and Mr. Nixon said that it was irresponsible. He was opposed to it. Now, when President Nixon started his troop withdrawal program, I was one of the first to applaud him. I went to the White House to see the president. I talked to him. I came out and publicly supported his effort at troop withdrawal. I said he would have my support. And I took a lot of criticism from fellow Democrats and from a number of young people. But I happen to think that peace is not a partisan issue. And I want to help the president gain peace, and I'll do so regardless of the political consequences. And when he follows that course of action, he'll have my help. But I can't agree, and I didn't, may I say, during the Johnson days, with the expansion of the war. And by the way, President Johnson did not go into Cambodia. He refused to go in. Now, maybe he was right, maybe he was wrong, but that's the fact. And when President Nixon moved into that area with all of the military arguments for it, I felt that it would only increase the tension at home, that it would be very costly in men and materials, that it would not be decisive, and that I thought that instead of limiting the war to Vietnam, it became an Indochina war all through the entire peninsula of Southeast Asia, and that's what's happened. And I want Mr. Nixon to be successful in our disengagement effort. I happen to think that if he can be successful, he'll go down as a great president.
Party Line on CCO Radio, this portion brought to you by Miracle White. Miracle White giving us this time to talk with the former vice president. And here's another call. Hello, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Humphrey, I was going to ask you if it might be possible to find out if you have been working on your athletic endeavors in regard to golf and tennis. I understand that the new nominations for president in 1972 and 76 are going to be pretty much athletic. And I would checking to see if your golf and tennis game was up and if you had your hard hat yet.
Well, I'll tell you, you can see what a terrible golf player I am. I'm not even good enough to be able to hit a ball that hits somebody else, but I like it. And as for tennis, it's been some time since I've played it. I'm really a spectator.
Sometime when you have the opportunity, you should take on Charlie and Roger.
Oh, I tell you, I hear they're pros. I don't think that's fair. My handicap, by the way, in golf, boys, is about 36. I hope you'll give me those strokes.
You know who this sounds like, Mr. Humphrey? It sounds like a coach of ours, John McNamee, is on the line. I recognize. Is that John?
Right.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
I'll try to stay in shape, though, John.
All righty.
Thank you for calling, John.
Have you appeared at any Billy Graham get-togethers lately?
Not lately, but Raj, let me tell you that I've known Billy a long time, and I have a high regard for him. When I was mayor of Minneapolis here some 25 years ago, Billy was at the Northwest College here and studying for the ministry. And he used to go with the YMCA, and I would go there, and we would work out together and swim and play handball. And I've known Billy over a long period of time and communicate with him quite regularly. Uh-huh. Billy prays for Republicans and Democrats, I might add. And I'm glad he does, because let me tell you, we both can use it, plenty of it.
Very good. Our guest today, Hubert H. Humphrey. And thank you, Miracle White, for bringing us the Party Line. Miracle White, makers of Miracle White Cream Laundry Detergent, Miracle White Powerizer Super Cleaner, Miracle White First In Fabric Softener, and other products, too. Miracle White.
Pardon me, bud, you got a mint?
Got a mint.
I got a lot of mints. I got a mint full of mints.
Fritzy Fresh has some mints, I'll tell you.
Oh, I'll tell you, they're delicious. You know, you can get a buy-in mints right now, too, and they're... I don't know of any candy that's more acceptable than mints, do you?
Mm-mm. That buy is three packages for a dollar at most markets around the area.
You can get jelly-centered mints. They're fluffy white mints filled with mint jelly. They're so good.
How about those assorted mints? Assorted pastel colors, little mint pillows. Remember those? Perfect for little party favors that we use a lot for these graduation parties coming up, wedding receptions, and so on.
You like Swedish mints or Norwegian mints?
I know they have some Swedish mint, but they aren't made in Sweden, I guess.
No, these are little ones, mints with little red stripes on them.
Yeah. And, of course, mints. Listen, you don't want to be embarrassed by serving your friends and relatives stale mints, so be sure to buy the right kind of mints.
You know how many kinds of mints they got at Fritzy Fresh?
How many?
53 different types of mints. Fritzy Fresh candy. Make it your bag.
Remember now, three for a dollar.
Wow.
That's packages, not just mints.
74 degrees in our Twin Cities right now at 2:30. And this is the Party Line. And Vice President Humphrey, our guest from Studios Minneapolis, St. Paul 830. This is WCCO.
Beep, beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep.
For breakfast. This
beep.
Morning, my son
beep.
Remembered to put back the beep for breakfast in the refrigerator, and so I had chilled beep for breakfast, and it is delicious.
Good, yeah. Boy, I tell you, kids going nuts for it.
Oh, I'll tell you.
But it's fascinating to find that so many adults actually like beep for breakfast.
Oh, they love it for breakfast, because when you're kind of groggy, you don't have to mix anything, make a mess. You just pour it right out of whatever it's in.
Beep for breakfast. 6 fruit juices blended into one.
Say you can get it from your dairy root man, or get it in the grocery store in your dairy case.
Do you know that it contains vitamin C and A and all the natural goodness of those 6 fruit juices?
All the goodies. Look for it. It's in the bright yellow, red, and blue carton, and it's delicious in 6 different ways.
Beep for breakfast, made especially for kids.
What do you suppose it tastes like? Let's see, apricot, maybe orange?
Yeah, pineapple, maybe?
Grapefruit?
Try beep.
Beep, 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 beep.
For breakfast.
And now it's Midwest Federal time. Midwest Federal. Good tree to come to for shelter.
Here's a quick call from a listener. Hello, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Humphrey?
Yes, hello.
Hello. Do you know back in the early part of 1960, I had the privilege of waiting on you 2 or 3 different times as a waitress in a certain hotel downtown?
Did you really? Was that at the Sheraton Ritz?
No, sir. Huh. I don't know if that was up at the time.
Huh.
But it was the Dykeman Hotel.
Oh, yes.
The coffee shop.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And I had the privilege of waiting on you 2-3 different times and shaking hands with you. And it was really a thrill to find out that you were our vice president when you were after I knew you.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to, this is all I wanted to tell you, and I just wanted to tell you it's a privilege to have you on the radio.
I thank you very, very much. And all I can say is when I talk to a person like yourself, I always... I'm grateful for the kindness that is always extended to Mrs. Humphrey and myself by you fine ladies that wait on us when we go to these splendid restaurants of ours in the Twin Cities.
That means a lot, doesn't it? The personal contact you have with people.
It's everything. It's the food which you live by in public mm-hmm. life, so to speak. It gives you that extra energy when you start to run out of gas, so to speak.
Because people do identify with you when they have met you.
Well, I identify with them. Mm-hmm. I really like people, and if you don't like people, I mean, if you don't really get a stimulus out of people, you really can't take public life.
You have to enjoy it, don't you?
Yes, you do, and you have to find something that's rewarding and rather refreshing out of your contacts with people.